The Home Show with Sinead Ryan on News Talk.
Hello and you're very welcome along to the latest episode of the Home Show podcast. I'm Sinead Ryan, your host, and we are produced by News Talk. Coming up this week, neuroarchitecture, what is it? And should all of our homes be designed with neurodiverse population in mind? The rental crisis has led to a rise in accommodation scams. So how can we spot them, especially if you have a student going to college later in the year? It's that time of year again for the Ideal Home Show. It's just around the corner. We'll be finding out what's coming to town. And Denise O'Connor will be here to talk about patterned flooring and how less can sometimes be more. If you'd like to get involved in our podcast, we love to hear from listeners. You can email us at thehomeshow@newstalk.com. We pick those up during the week. You can find me over on Instagram and X at SineadRyan100. And I do like to listen and to hear from people there as well. Now, with Easter, and truly over, students are heading into their final term before they're leaving cert, and God love them, every year you're glad it's not you anymore. Now, many are already, of course, looking forward to college, deciding on last minute changes to their CAO forms, and can't wait to get the exams over and done with. And of course, parents will probably be wondering what the whole exercise is going to cost, and the very last thing they need is to be scammed out of their hard-earned college money to pay for their son and daughter's student accommodation. So do stay tuned. We have an interesting conversation coming up about scams, tons, millions being stolen from people trying to source accommodation at the moment because it's such a crisis. It is on the increase. But if you've encountered any or if you've been scammed out of your rent or deposits, do let me know. I'd be very interested in hearing from people on this topic, because we will also be covering it more than once, I'm certain, as this increases. Sinead Ryan 100 on Instagram and the home show at newstalk.com. And for now, you are very welcome along to the show. Now, XUL Architecture in Northwest London is an award-winning designer of residential properties that has been featured in just about every major design publication in the UK. They are also practitioners of neuroarchitecture, which is something many of us have never heard of. Well, I certainly haven't. Maya Lemlich is Business Director at XUL Architecture and joins me now to talk all about it. Maya, this is something I don't know about, but I have a very, very particular interest in. So I'm delighted we have you on the show now. Let's start by asking you, what is neural architecture?
Hi, thank you so much for having me. Neuroarchitecture basically uses the principles and what we know of neuroscience and applies it in design and architecture. So it's as simple as that.
Now, you come at this from both sides, as an architect and as a person who is neurodiverse. So talk to me a little bit about that.
Yes, I mean, I'm an architect by training, and we have practice with my husband, Sebastian Sandler, and I was diagnosed with ADHD when I was 40, I think it's like 4 or 5 years ago. And it just kind of sparked our interest, really. We have a whole neurodiverse household as well. And we started to notice or a little bit more how the spaces that we inhabited had an impact on our ADHD and how we felt. And was like, okay, there's something here. So we started doing a bit more research and realizing that although we were always very kind of, or try to be very kind of human-centered in our designs and the houses that we designed and really focus on the people that we're designing for, I think we wanted to take it to another level and think, you know, what is, you know, it's not just about how things look, and people would always come to us with images from Pinterest and, you know, catalogs and magazines. So it's not just about the looks, but it's also about how things make us feel emotionally, but also from the kind of sensory point of view. So in terms of the temperature, or, you know, people might be more sensitive to light, or people might be more sensitive to sound and noise. So we had a lot to go on from our own experience and the mistakes that we had made in our own house and designing our own house 12 years ago. And yeah, so it kind of took us on a journey to try to find out a little bit more and understand more. Mm. So that's where we're at now. So it's a fairly new journey for us, but we're kind of, you know, all in.
And it's a fairly new journey, possibly for lots of interior designers and indeed developers who may need to incorporate in the same way that we now, you know, as a matter of course, involve physical disabilities like, you know, low level lights for wheelchair users or extra large bathrooms. And that has become a feature of many, many homes now. So considerations then that somebody with ADHD may have, what kind of challenges? You mentioned their sensory ones, but is there also a piece about spatial awareness and how the interior space is used in a house? Because we know, at least in Ireland, I'm sure it's the same in the UK, that these big open plan kitchens and downstairs rooms where there's a flow, as designers call it, does that pose a challenge to some people with ADHD?
Yes, no, absolutely. And I think there's no one size fits all. Mm-hmm. There's no magic wand. So, you know, but what we understand so far is that, yeah, there was this big trend of open plans, for example. And if you think, you know, very kind of primitive, basic needs of humans is that we need a space, you know, to be socialized, but we also need a place to retreat. And what the open plan doesn't give you necessarily, and again, it depends on the space and it depends on the family and, you know, but it doesn't really give us the space to retreat. So for someone with ADHD, if you have a busy household, you know, a few children and lots of things happening at the same time, and, you know, someone's cooking and someone's trying to study and someone's watching TV, and there's just a lot going on, you know, it might just not provide the space for someone to do something a bit more quiet, or where someone wants to just go and be on their own, which is something that, you know, very commonly people with ADHD need. Mm. You know, and anyone. And the thing is that all of these things that we know about people that might be neurodivergent, it applies to everyone, really. We all need, you know, calm and quiet at certain points in our day, in our life. And we might be under stress, and sometimes we might have, you know, different needs because we're going through a particularly difficult time in our life. Mm. So I think it's important to, you know, recognize that these are all learnings that can be applied to anyone.
Yeah. And I think during COVID in particular, where everybody was at home and everybody is stuck indoors, they realized that whole open plan thing actually is pretty difficult when everybody wants their own space, and maybe there'll be a return to individual rooms, or at least ways you can block off spaces. Now, lighting is a big area, I know, generally for lots of people, and we are all trying to bring more light into our homes naturally, but sometimes too much can be too much. And, you know, people that you work with would have particular challenges in that area. So talk to me a little bit about that, Maya.
Yeah, I mean, lighting, obviously, we love light. The name of the company is SXUL because it's an anagram of the word lux, which is light in Latin. So since we founded the company, it's all been about light for us. And we always recognize intuitively how important it was. And then the more we learn about the science of it and what it does to our bodies and how important it is for our circadian rhythms, now we're kind of, you know, doing more and more about it. But yes, it can be, you know, a bit too much. And I think I'm particularly sensitive to having kind of direct sunlight. And I find it really uncomfortable. So I think it's looking, if we are going to have, you know, lots of glazing, which is very popular now, they have these big extensions with, you know, that was all glazing, look at the orientation, whether that's appropriate for the orientation of the house. It might be that it's just, you're going to have, you know, sunset, or, you know, in the morning, it's just going to be a bit of an overload. And overload. And look also like skylights, orientation of the skylights. You know, they don't necessarily need to be flat. They don't need to be square. So you can think creatively of, you know, sometimes if they're tilted, you maximize the ingress of light, but you can direct it a little bit to, you know, a corner of the house so that it's kind of reflects the light off the walls and not necessarily, you know, the light comes straight into your face.
I see. So it's more slanted or subtle.
Exactly. Okay. So it can be a bit more subtle. And I think, and something as well that we always try and recommend is if you're having lots of, you know, big windows and glazing, to think of, you know, very early on in the design process, to think of integrated blind systems. So, and I think a lot of, you know, the design in your architecture, it's about building in flexibility, and we don't feel the same, or we don't have the same needs all of the time. So if you have some sort of, you know, the right blind systems or integrated blinds at different times of the day, you can change, you know, you can open them or close them, or just kind of filter out some of the light that might be a bit too much. So and it gives you that flexibility.
I suppose the same rules then apply to colour, because people with neurodivergence maybe crave that quietness. And is it the case that for some people with sensory issues, it may be that patterns or loud colours can be quite unsettling? So would you recommend an approach then that is tailored towards maybe the neutrals?
Yeah, I mean, the colour one is really interesting, because we, again, this is very personal, but we're always a bit conflicted between, you know, having quite a neutral palette. And if you think of nature, and using the color of nature is always a good starting point. So yes, neutrals or greens and blues, and different tones of greens and blues. But on the other hand, you know, people who are neurodivergent and ADHD can be quite creative as well. So, you know, we are bold and we're creative, and so we ended up painting, you know, a column is like bright yellow, and then we have a blue wall, and then we, you know, so it's kind of thinking, how do you express that creativity? And we have, you know, a lot of clients that have like really crazy tiles and lots of pattern, but really maybe taking a step back that I don't think we did a few years ago, and thinking, okay, we know you love these and this is super exciting and super fun, but you just bear in mind, you're going to see it all the time. Or where are the spaces? Maybe in some spaces are, you know, your social spaces in the kitchen and stuff like that, where maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe it's fun to have all of that, you know, colorful things. And in the end, you know, there's all the colors in nature, so it's also fine to have any colors.
Okay.
But maybe think, if there's a space where you're expecting to go on, you know, study or, you know, have some calm, quiet, maybe it's not the most appropriate to have lots of patterns. So I think it's, yeah, thinking what the space is meant to be doing for you and how it's meant to be making you feel.
Yeah.
And then maybe choose certain corners or certain areas to kind of, you know, go
express crazy. Your creativity. And I suppose then, if that's the case with colour and light, well, then you don't want loads of things around the place, clutter and, you know, lots and lots of things that are busy to look at. So is that an important thing, how you flow around that space?
Yes, no, absolutely. And I think for me particularly, visual clutter is massive and I find it incredibly distracting. So, you know, and as important as it is to have things that provide some stimulation, because also you can't have completely like kind of sensory deprivation. Again, have the right type of storage so you can have the right things that maybe have some emotional value or some meaning to you out, but not that much that you can, you know, lots of surfaces where everything gets left out. And, you know, it makes it impossible to put things away. So planning your storage really carefully, planning, you know, what goes out where, you know, very few of us are kind of Marie Kondos. So you can't, you know, so you really need to think, it needs to be made really easy. And, you know, a lot of people will say, well, but I love having all my stuff out and I love all my knickknacks and my souvenirs and all of these, and it just makes me happy. But the science tells us that, like, our brain doesn't like when it's just, it can be overwhelming. So yeah, I think planning the storage and what's on display, and again, in what spaces, what the space is doing. And so it should be done in the spaces where it's okay to have that level of stimulation.
Now, you mentioned something in an article I read about postural sway. Explain to me what that is. I found it very interesting.
I mean, there's this thing, it has to do with attention and navigation, how we kind of navigate space. And there is a bit of a correlation between people that have ADHD, that we kind of, I don't know how to explain it, you kind of sway when you walk or you bump into things, kind of a bit of, it comes a bit with not being very coordinated sometimes. So where things are positioned or placed in your way from A to B is important to consider, because we might just, yeah, bump into things, or we might be distracted thinking of, you know, being in La La Land and walking places and just literally not see the wall in front of us. So So thinking of kind of keeping clear lines of sight, clear path, you know, where you place your furniture, sharp corners. Yeah, so that's kind of important. Yeah. Also in office environments and things like that, it's like really important that you keep that space clear.
Good life lessons for us all. I don't know how many times I've whacked my shin off a low table or the side of a chair, and we always curse it, don't we? Do you think, you mentioned offices there, Maya, do you think we should be incorporating neuroarchitecture into our all new homes? And what about public buildings like hospitals and libraries and offices and places like that?
So I think all the public buildings and institutional buildings are a step ahead. So there is, and most of the research on neuroarchitecture is being done in hospitals and, you know, museums, office spaces, educational buildings, schools, and so on. So that's actually where all the research is coming from. There is now also guidelines on design for neurodiversity. I think it's called the PAS. So, you know, I think it's more and more, and you know, with campaigns and a lot more awareness on neurodiversity, it's, you know, there's a lot more awareness in general. But I think definitely it should be incorporated into residential buildings and homes and private houses. And obviously it will vary in the degree probably. And but I think there's certain principles that are easy enough to incorporate. And I think a lot of it is just like taking a step back and thinking about us being human. And it's not just about the ergonomics and, you know, basically a lot of what is designed, we design about our height and our, you know, how we move, and it's all about kind of our physical being, but it's not necessarily about how we feel or how we think. So it's just taking a step back and thinking about what makes us human and our kind of primitive needs, really, and integrate them. There's, you know, like WELL certification. So I think it is gaining momentum quite rapidly. So I think we'll be seeing a lot more of these. But yeah, I think it should be applied.
Good.
And hopefully will be.
Hopefully will be. Well, listen, you're obviously at the forefront of that. And I think it must be very, very interesting to have the lived experience that you can bring as an expert to your business. Where can people find out more about XUL or Lux backwards?
Probably the easiest way is to go onto our website, xularchitecture.co.uk, or we're on all kind of social media channels. Lovely to hear from anyone.
All right. And I must say, I find this topic very, very interesting. And I'm sure our listeners have gained a great deal out of it, because there are so many more people being diagnosed happily these days with neurodivergence. And I, by the way, Maya said that you were only diagnosed couple of years ago. So do you think there are more people in adulthood, when they are buying their own homes or at that stage where they're thinking about their living space, who are getting diagnosed late in life?
Yes, and I think it's probably kind of the age bracket of, you know, being your 30s and 40s. And what I hear mostly is when they're seeking diagnosis for their children. So
yes.
Then the kids get diagnosed and then the parents get diagnosed. So that's what I found most of all, kind of filling in the forms for kids. And I'm like, oh, I actually tick all of these boxes. But of course, we didn't know about it. So we've always compensated and masked, especially in women. So yeah, so it's been like fascinating to kind of untangle what's actually ADHD and what's me and what's both. And the little strategies that we, you know, create. But and it kind of is the time when people are probably doing up their houses and refurbishing. So to have that understanding is, you know, hugely valuable, I think.
Indeed. Indeed it is. Well, listen, thank you for bringing all of that to us, Maya Lemlich of XUL Architecture in the UK. And it's been really, really insightful. Now, nobody needs reminding that we are in the middle of a rental crisis in this country. And, you know, it is a sad reality of any crisis that it creates desperate people who can fall prey to bad actors witching to exploit their situation. So perhaps it's unsurprising to learn that there has been a wave of rental scams in Ireland over the last few years. Now, how do they work and how can we avoid falling victim to them, especially if you're a parent maybe who has a child beginning college this year and they're going to be away from home and you're trying desperately to get them somewhere to stay? Well, Conor McGarry is CEO and founder of Rent Dodo and joins me now on the line. Conor, you're very welcome to the Home Show.
Good morning, Sinead.
Now, outline for me a little how a typical scam might play out for accommodation, whether it's somebody looking to rent an apartment or a house or a college student.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose the one of the common platforms where rental kind of scams initiated are on social media groups, where people will kind of join social media groups looking for property to rent. And then people will put up ads there of properties to rent. And there's no way of kind of verifying who put up the ad or verifying the property. And people are kind of desperate to find accommodation because there's very little of it around. So they'll apply to these ads on social media groups. And then the person will kind of use, you know, the typical pressure tactics to kind of get the user to kind of part with their money before even seeing the property. And in most cases, the property won't exist. So it's a serious problem there. And they're using social media groups because, you know, it's a very captive audience and there's very little kind of background checks on the users using it. And, you know, it's a very easy way to communicate with kind of, you know, desperate tenants.
So it's less likely to be, say, daft.ie or one of those sites. Is that because they do verifying checks or is it just they're not going to be listed there because they don't want the hassle of it?
Yeah, they don't want to have that. And obviously, if you have to pay to use these other sites, you know, if you're using a property portal or a letting agency, you know, you have to pay for those services. So using a social media platform is a very, you know, kind of easy, cheap way to kind of get into, you know, scamming tenants. And in a lot of cases, they mightn't even actually be based in Ireland. So this week, I've seen two ads on social media groups this week. One was a fake letting agency. So that's something to watch out for. They purport to be a letting agency. They have kind of professional business photos, you know, kind of fake, you know, logos and stuff like that. And then they have properties. And they use pressure tactics saying, pay the deposit now, it's refundable before you go to the viewing. And that should be an instant red flag for any kind of, you know, prospective tenant to never part with any deposit before you see the property.
Okay, so legitimate landlords with legitimate properties don't charge you to come and look for it, to secure it before you've seen it.
Exactly, and the same with letting agents as well. And, you know, they're saying like, you know, pay the money by the end of the day to secure this, this property. And like, if you think of a typical landlord, you know, say their tenant is vacating their current property, they usually give, say, a month's notice. So the landlord has a month's notice in a lot of these cases, you know, and there's probably going to be some sort of painting, redecorating going on, you know, repairs. It's not like, you know, I suddenly need money in my bank account in the next 24 hours. Mm. Those sort of pressure tactics aren't applied, you know, by most landlords and letting agents. So that should be a red flag. Letting agents and landlords will do viewings, usually by appointment, you know. And then the tenant should be aware of things like, you know, who is this landlord and who is the letting agent? Letting agency will have, you know, registered with the Property Services Regulatory Authority. You can look that up.
And you're talking about letting agents would be somebody like Sherry Fitzgerald or DNG or, you know, Lisney, somebody that you are familiar with. They have a street address and you know who they are.
Yes, exactly. And they're regulated. And while landlords, you know, they have to register their lease with the Residential Tenancies Board. So there is a database you can go to. You can see that this property does have an active lease on it. You know, it's registered with the RTB. And then things like, you know, you can ask the landlord for ID. You could ask them for some sort of proof of ownership of the property, like, you know, maybe a local property tax receipt. But the RTB does have a database that you can search. It's very, very basic, but you can see that there was previous rentals on the property.
Okay. So we hear, like, from time to time, and I know I hear it from frustrated tenants and indeed landlords who have disputes and they're trying to get them resolved, that the RTB, it's very cumbersome, it's very slow, nothing ever happens quickly. But this database of landlords, how valuable is it? Because, I mean, we know when the rent tax credit was introduced in the last budget, we were told that only a fraction of people, renters, actually went to go for it. And part of the reason was because they didn't have a registered landlord. They didn't have something, they were paying their rent in cash, they, you know, didn't have all the information that the revenue needs to give them this tax credit. So how valuable is the database? I mean, is there policing of it, Connor, that you know of?
No, it probably wouldn't be, you know, as comprehensive as we'd like, but the tenant should still be aware that, you know, there is something that they can kind of double check, you know, this property in a kind of independent database. I would also then, you know, for new tenants especially, insist that, you know, the landlord will provide proof that the lease has been registered with the RTB, and then they can get it, you know, there's a receipt that, you know, that they can forward on. So I think, you know, the tenant needs to be aware of these things as well, you know, kind of the process of going through a lease. I think, you know, paying in cash, you know, is probably not ideal. You know, first of all, there's no kind of record that it happened unless there's, you know, the landlord's handing over receipts. So yeah, I think the tenant should be aware that, you know, they're probably going to need to do a couple of checks, you know, in different places. Unfortunately, we don't have, you know, a fully comprehensive database that you can look up rental properties or landlords.
And I suppose people looking for accommodation, you know, they really are desperate. It is so hard to come by that maybe they don't want to ask these questions. They don't want to demand things of a potential landlord. Show me your local property tax registration. Show me a receipt. Show me your air code number, all this kind of thing, because they feel, oh, he'll think I'm more trouble than I'm worth. He'll just go to the next guy in the queue.
There is probably an element to that, but I think just to get around the rental scams, like, that's a good way of kind of weeding out the rental scammers, because they're not going to have that information at all anyway.
Yeah.
So at least you're kind of tackling that issue by kind of asking for some sort of background checks on the landlord. But I think landlords should kind of participate in kind of assuring the tenant that, look, this is my property. I'm leasing this to you, and I'm a bona fide landlord. I think, because if they don't do that, and if there's kind of like, you know, friction there, you know, then we're down the road again of maybe, you know, who knows, there may be more regulation brought into the industry. Mm. And look, every year over the last couple of years, there's been new regulations brought in, which is, like, you know, it's not ideal. We don't want, you know, more and more regulation. So I think, you know, both parties should kind of participate in this, kind of doing background checks on each other.
Yeah.
And everyone then would be happier, you know.
Okay. Now, I did read with some alarm that according to An Garda Síochána, around 2 million euros has been stolen in accommodation and rental scams over the past 5 years. So tell us a little bit, Connor, of the kind of the red flags. You mentioned one there, that if the landlord is abroad. So how would you know that?
Well, for instance, they might say pay the rent to an IBAN that isn't an Irish IBAN, or pay the rent or the deposit to some sort of payment portal that you've never seen before. And they'd be kind of, you know, obvious red flags. A lot of them actually say, look, I'm traveling at the moment, I need, you know, pay the money now, and things like this. Mm-hmm. Or they'll create a fake middleman kind of controlling the kind of flow of information, say, you know, my mate will handle this, you know, I'm out of the country, etc. Like, these are just kind of red flags. You know, a landlord and a letting agent will meet you at the property to do a proper viewing and never pay over any deposit until you view the property, until you've kind of verified that, you know, this is the landlord or the letting agent and this is their property to rent. And then there's, like, there's very basic things you can do then. You know, you can get the keys, you can try them in the door, you know, it sounds ridiculous, but it's, you know, it sure is then that you have access to that property.
Yeah.
Make sure you get a lease document. While, you know, leases are, you know, governed by the Residential Tenancies Act, you know, get a lease document anyway, because that will have, you know, kind of the contact details and that of the landlord in it, you know.
Okay.
So I think, yeah, the other things, you know, to look at, like, watch out for social media groups. You know, people are desperate for property. You know, they're trying to put a roof over their head. But social media groups tend to be where most of these scams take place.
Okay.
Just watch that.
Okay. And tell me then what it is you do at Rent Dodo.
So we verify both tenants and landlords and letting agents. So we want to kind of have a platform where, you know, there's a certain kind of minimum standard of rental applicant. And on the same side for the tenant, then they can kind of, you know, have some more trust in the system that the landlord and the letting agent using our platform is also verified. So we do ID verification. What we do is we ask them to kind of take a photo of their driving license or passport, and then we do a live ID, a live selfie. And then we're able to match that within about 20 or 30 seconds. It's pretty standard technology, like, say, you know, people like Revolut do it now. It's becoming more and more common that, you know, you're turning over large sums of money. You know, a lease is nearly as big a financial obligation as a mortgage in terms of monthly outflow.
Sure, sure.
In some cases, more. But, you know, renting is still kind of seen as a very kind of, you know, ad hoc, you know, lacking in maybe certain kind of professional kind of standards. You know, we want to help introduce that, you know.
Okay, yeah. So where can people find out more about that then, Conor?
It's rentdodo.ie.
Rentdodo.ie, right. So you're the kind of the paid dating agency rather than the Tinder approach, is that it?
Yeah, something like that.
All right, okay. Fantastic. All right, well, look, great tips there. And look, for anybody who has a student going to college, listen, it is going to be hard, folks. And if it looks too good to be true, you know, isn't that the thing? It probably is. So do stay safe out there, as they say, and make sure that you don't lose more money than it's going to cost you to send your kid to college as it is. All right. Conor McGarry, CEO and founder of RentDodo. Thanks a million for joining us on The Home Show today.
Thank you.
Now, the PTSB Ideal Home Show will return once again to the RDS from Friday, the 26th of April, up to that Sunday. There's over 220 exhibitors on hand, so we're going to find out what visitors can expect this year. Catherine O'Connor is show director of the PTSB Ideal Home Show and joins me now on the line. Catherine, you're very welcome to The Home Show.
Thank you, Sinead.
Now, as always, a big event in the calendar for interiors and people building and restructuring and retrofitting and all that kind of thing. So give us an idea of what people can expect this year if they head along to the RDS.
Absolutely. So we have an action-packed show in store. We have three advice theatres. We have two advice hubs, which are the Phone Watch Ask an Expert, where you can get some free one-on-one advice with experts. We have the Fleetwood Interior Design Hub, where you can get some free interior design and colour advice. With the three theatres, one of them is the DFS Interiors Theatre, which is hosted by Joe Linehan. And the second one is the Mitsubishi Electric Home Advice Theatre, where we have talks from SEAI to architects to revenue. So anyone that is looking to do some renovations, home energy upgrades, new builds can go to that theatre. And finally, we have the Dunstores Chef's Live Theatre, where we have some cooking demos all weekend from Nevin Maguire, Donna Skehan and Aileen Cox.
Now, people love the old cooking ones, don't they? I mean, you know, I've been along to them and they love the little snacks and the freebies and the cooking smells and getting the recipes on them.
And actually, Dunstores have two amazing sampling areas within the show. So the first one is where they are sampling the Simply Better range. So there's 8 different food producers each day, so people can sample theirs. And they have the Dunstores Summer Kitchen, where you can try items from their Saba at Home range, which is new to Dunstores, and also lots of products as well from the different producers within Dunstores.
Go along early is my tip. You
Most
might get
definitely.
Your lunch if you're lucky. All right. Now, one of the things you mentioned there, energy usage and retrofitting continues, like it's always a key cornerstone of property and homes. And we've had the SEAI on our show recently and people, architects are building more and more into that whole area because of the fantastic grants available. So you have this energy hub now, and does it give people ideas then of what things will cost, because everything's so expensive now, and what grants they can get?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Electric Ireland Superhomes home advice area is all about anyone that's looking to get the home energy upgrades. Some people may be changing from a boiler to a heat pump. SEAI themselves are at the show and all their advisors are there to give out some useful forms on the Better Home Scheme, the Warmer Home Scheme. We also have an EV area, the Drive Electric area, where you can get some information on the grants for change into electric cars and home systems, you know, for the EV charging.
Brilliant. Okay, now there's always a great outdoor section, barbecues, furniture, all that kind of thing. Now, despite our unsettled weather, it's still very popular and we live every year in eternal hope that we are going to be able to use our outside rooms.
Absolutely. And we actually have the Dermot Gavin Outer Spaces range with Dunstores, where there's going to be some pots, some plants. We have hot tubs, jacuzzis, artificial grass. We have some garden sheds and also home offices, which are still really popular because as much as some people have come back to the office, quite a lot of people we find are extending their gardens by a home office. And, you know, some people use it as a playroom or even just an area to relax and...
Yeah, get away from the kids, right. Leave the kids in the house in their playroom and run down the back garden into your den. Okay, now, as ever, you have a couple of quirky, kind of unusual suppliers. And one of them I was looking at, which I thought was fantastic, because we've talked about the old Murphy beds, which is a very old Irish kind of arrangement in old houses. But Hidden Bed Ireland have this modern update of the Murphy bed. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, they really do. So Hidden Bed, they've been with the show, I would say, at least 10 years now. And what they are doing within the show is that their system itself is like a desk that people can obviously do their work from. And on top of that, then they can also, like, it's a system that they just basically push down and the bed itself comes up from it. It's like a balancing mechanism that allows everything to stay on the desktop, even a glass of water, while the bed itself is in use.
So the bed is on the wall, the desk is out front, and you pull the bed down and everything underneath it stays exactly as it was. You don't have to clear it off every time. Isn't that it?
No.
I think people might like that idea. And then there's another one which I think would definitely do somebody like me who has absolutely zero spatial skills. And it is Lifestyle Plans Leinster. Strange name, but tell me about this, because I want this all the time.
Yeah, theirs is really interesting because... it's actually the first ever full-scale home walkthrough system, so that if you are getting some design done in the house, their technology enables you to walk through the plans of your house design into a life-size scale before you even start the project. So in other words, sometimes if you're getting something built onto the house, then you see it and you're thinking, oh God, I should have done this or should have moved this a little bit over. It means that you can make all those changes before the project has even begun.
So it's like a VR, like a virtual reality headset thing. Great, wonderful.
Absolutely. Lifestyle's plans are at the show, and they're also doing talk on Saturday morning at the Mitsubishi Electric Home.
Okay, brilliant. Okay, so that's two of the 220 exhibitors on hand, and people can go down and look at that. Now, Katrina, where can people get tickets and find out more about the Ideal Home Show?
So at the moment, there's free tickets for a limited time on idealhome.ie. So everyone can go onto the homepage and they can register for tickets to come to the show.
Fantastic. All right. So people can find out more about that. All right. Well, listen, Katrina O'Connor, I hope it's a great success. It usually is. And it's always a nice day out. That's the Ideal Home Show back at the RDS from April 26th to April 28th. And Katrina O'Connor, thank you for joining us on the show this morning.
Thank you so much, Sinead.
And you're very welcome back to the Home Show podcast with me, Sinead Ryan, here on News Talk. If you'd like to get in touch, we are on email at thehomeshow@newstalk.com. And I'm over on Instagram at SineadRyan100. Now, when it comes to flooring and floors, most of us, I think, take the safe option and go neutral, because we want all of the busyness to be on our walls and furniture and all of that. But pale carpets are out, bland is boring, and cream tiles are tiresome. So here to put us straight on adding a little pattern to our floors when it's all too much is Denise O'Connor from Optimised Design. Denise, you're very welcome back to the Home Show.
Thank you, Sinead. Great to be here.
Now, none of us want murder on our floors. So what we tend to do is go for the neutrals and the pale and the bland and leave our walls to do the talking and our furniture to do the talking. However, there is a bit of a trend towards patterned floor and utilising, you know, the stuff we know and love, the carpets, the rugs, the tiles and the wood, but in a patterned way. I'm kind of not quite there yet, because I kind of think I wouldn't get it right and I wouldn't be so sure.
Sure.
But you're here to help. So talk to me about different ways, if we love a bit of pattern, that we can really jazz up the floor, and when should we do it?
Yeah, sure. Well, look, flooring, it is a huge, huge decision for people. Like I know when I did up my house a few years ago, the floors were actually the thing that sort of I found tricky. And this is me doing it all day, every day. I sat with tiles looking at them in my office for months before saying yes, because it's a big cost and it's something that's going to be costly to replace if you get it wrong. And then you're stuck with it. And it does sort of unify everything. It pulls everything together. So I completely understand, you know, if you're going one step further and being a bit bold and introducing pattern, you want to be sure you're getting that right. But having said that, there are some key areas where it's easy to introduce it and have a little bit of fun. So spaces like guest WC, for example, I'm always talking about that, how you can go mad in
fun
there.
Fun with the loo,
yeah,
can't you?
Okay, or bathrooms, right. Things like that. So something like a mosaic, or even there's lovely kind of marbles that you can mix and use patterns. So that's an easy way to bring it in. Other ideas are a porch. You know, if you have a porch in a house, little black and white checkerboard.
It's only a small space.
Exactly.
So even if you get it wrong, it's not going to blind anybody.
No.
You know, they're not going to be commenting on it when they leave your house.
Exactly.
You know, what did
or
you do with
the
floor?
Or you can throw a mat over it or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, yeah. All right. Well, let's look at different surfaces then and how we can utilise different materials to create a patterned look. The first one, and I suppose the cheapest one, is to paint.
Yeah, definitely. So this is, you know, it's very cost effective way to do it. It's something you can, if you're brave enough, skilled enough, have a go yourself. I'd suggest if you're doing it yourself, keep it simple. So again, something like a checkerboard is probably...
Oh, here now. So are you down to the masking tape?
Yeah, you are. So it's going to require a little bit of patience, a little bit of setting it out, but... is very achievable. And again, you know, this is a hand-painted thing, so it doesn't have to be
super perfect.
Start
with the kid's room, isn't that the thing?
Exactly, kid's bedroom or a playroom or something like that. So, you know, or maybe it's something you're doing to tide you over till you can afford to put carpets down or whatever you plan to do. But a nice way to have a bit of fun and introduce some colour.
Now, whenever we're painting, of course, we have to look at preparation of the surface as much as what we're going to do with it afterwards. So what is the must-have before you start?
I think just to make sure the surface is, I think just to make sure that the surface is clean and well prepared. So what you don't want is any dust or any debris or anything like that. So make sure, particularly say with floorboards, you want to make sure they're well sanded down, dust free before you start putting down any kind of painted surface. And then I would always speak to the paint shop, because the guys that work in there, they're just so experienced, so knowledgeable. So make sure you tell them exactly what the surface is, whether it's tiles, whether it's timber, whatever you're painting, concrete, and they will give you the right primer for that job, because you're going to need different materials depending on the surface.
And the primer is the stuff that effectively sticks the paint to
exactly,
the surface.
To
okay,
the surface,
so it's really, you can't just not, you can't do without that.
No.
Okay. Right. So you were talking there about checkerboard and all that, but stencils can be quite a nice thing as well. I've used them on walls.
Yes.
But never on floors.
Yeah, no, stencils, and they're really easy to get your hands on now online. There's no end of options. You can even customize them and make your own, whatever they are. So they're a great way to just introduce a little bit of pattern, and probably much easier than having to set things out yourself with masking tape. So definitely worth giving that a go.
And you know, sometimes you see in school playgrounds, you see the little hopscotch thing painted out. I mean, you could do that in a playroom or something like that, or, you know, a snakes and ladders thing, if you were kind of artistic and had the time for it.
Yeah, and that's the lovely thing about paint. Like, you can be as creative as you want to be, or that as you're able to be. So, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Great.
Okay, and give yourself the time for it. Okay. Now, when it comes to timber, wood, you know, we love the wood, okay? Mm-hmm. And if we're not going to paint it, you know, it's not white deal, it's just something we really like, the oak or the, you know, the mahogany, whatever. Parquet flooring. Now, I know it's Marmite.
Mm-hmm.
I hated it for years and years and years, and now I adore it.
Yeah.
So
I
grew up in a house that had parquet flooring all over the, you know, in these patterns, chevron kind of herringbone thing. And I thought it was awful, dreadful. It was a real 1970s look.
Yeah.
And Janie Mac, everybody, every second person has it now again. So I've kind of come around to it. So is the first tip here, if you're going to use timber slots in a pattern, this isn't DIY territory, is it?
Oh, no, this, you need somebody pretty experienced to fit this. And I guess the more complex the pattern, the more experienced the fitter needs to be. So, like, for example, we've just done a job where we've used what are called Versailles panels. So these are beautiful sort of square panels all set out and there's a border. But the fitter was super experienced. I mean, this is what he does. He doesn't fit standard floors. He only fits these very specialist, intricate floors because they have to be fit in such a way that allows the timbers to move and expand and things like that. Otherwise, you're going to get movement in the floors and things popping up because there's a lot more parts to a floor like this than just your planks. So really important that the fitter is experienced.
What kind of patterns are people going for?
I think like it's a real mix depending on people's preferences. But what is very popular at the moment are more the chevron patterns. So that'd be like a more contemporary look of the herringbone or the old parquets like you're talking about.
That's like the upside down V's.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, yeah. And that can look really lovely. And the amazing thing about that is as well, it looks so different depending on the timber you choose or the stain that you use. So say the very blonde Scandinavian look looks so contemporary. And then if you go in a more traditional darker colour, it brings it back more to that heritage look. So yeah, it's incredible the difference you can get depending on what you pick.
And I interviewed somebody on the show a couple of years ago who had salvaged the parquet flooring from an old house.
Yes.
Was laying it in their own home.
Yeah.
Now, they were of the view that if they'd known what was ahead of them, they probably wouldn't have started.
Yes.
But they were thrilled with the result.
And it's what an amazing way. I met a man recently. He does this all the time for the family. Now, it's a huge undertaking because you're cleaning each of the blocks before you can put them in and sanding them. So, yes, it's a labour of love. But amazing to be able to reuse these floors rather than just getting rid of them. So, yeah, if you're that way inclined, amazing thing to do.
Mm. OK, yeah. So that's using the timber as the pattern rather than painting it or doing anything else with it. Now, of course, probably the most obvious thing then, and we alluded to it at the beginning, are the tiles.
Yes.
Because there are endless patterns available in tiles and we're used to them in the bathroom. We're used to them maybe in the cooking part of the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when we go on holidays then to hot countries, we see them in living rooms and bedrooms and all that kind of thing. So talk to me a little bit about what to consider. We were talking last week about patio tiles, but tiles in the home, if you're going to make a pattern out of it, like a painting on the floor.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I guess it's first of all, think about the room that you're using it in and the look you're trying to go for. So is your home more contemporary? Because you don't want it to jar with the overall style of the house. So you don't want to go for something that's more old fashioned if you've got a very contemporary look. So really, it's about blending the two styles and then the type of material that you're trying to use. So first of all, coming back to what the room is being used for, if it's a space like a kitchen or a hallway or, you know, even an entrance porch, something that's pretty heavily trafficked, you want to go for something that's super durable. So maybe marble, that kind of thing. You know, that does require a little bit more upkeep. It may stain. So something like a porcelain tile is going to be a brilliant choice in those areas.
And a little bit cheaper than the marble.
And a little bit cheaper than the marble, exactly. And as well, that's kind of a lay it and it's done. Whereas with marble, you may need to seal it, to treat it, that sort of thing. So there's a few more steps involved if you're going down that route. But something like an entrance porch, like we were saying, it's a great way to introduce a bit of pattern. So whether it's the little checkerboard style.
And they are pretty. It's kind of timeless, that black and white.
That
tile,
looks gorgeous.
It?
Yeah. And it'll suit any style of house, really. Or the patterned tiles that you can get now. There's some amazing colours or more monochrome look. That's a lovely way to introduce a little bit of fun from the moment you open the front door.
Or what seems to be having a moment at the moment. At the moment is the Moroccan look.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
Those kind of fully coloured tiles.
Yeah.
But if they're in a small space, they can actually lift. If everything else is bland, they can just become the feature, can't they?
No, it's lovely. And if you've got a really long hallway, sometimes it can be nice to sort of just do a section right at the front door in a tile like that, a really striking tile, and then carry your timber floor or your plain tiles beyond that. So it sort of creates this little mini internal porch as you step into the hall. It's also really practical, especially if you've got timber, just a practical kind of surface as you come in the front door.
Like an inlay.
Exactly, yeah. And it looks really, really nice.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good one. Now, when it comes to people who are a little bit nervous, Nellies, about laying the tiles and putting them all down, I mean, you can get kind of a sense of what it might look like with a rug or you know, a runner or yes. something like that.
Yeah.
So that might kind of take the urge away for patterns, if you can put that down, because you know you can kind of do away with it. So what are people going for there?
Yeah, well, I think, with, you know, in a hallway, a patterned runner is a brilliant idea, because halls tend to be sort of bland areas where we're passing through. You know, there's not usually a lot going on. They tend to be quite dark. And most hallways are pretty small spaces. So brilliant idea just to put a lovely, colourful, bright patterned runner on the floor, give everything a lift, introduce a little bit of colour. So that's a really easy way to do it. And now, it's super affordable too, you know.
Exactly, because yeah. you don't have to spend a fortune on it. No. Now, talk to me finally about this product, which I've never heard of, called the LVT.
Yes, what the is luxury that? Vinyl tile. So this is, it's like you may have heard of the product Amtico, a little bit like that. So a very, very hard wearing product. It's not, people think of the vinyl flooring, you know, that we would have grown up with in kitchens. And
that's not this.
No, that is not this. So this is actually quite an expensive product, but indestructible. So it's a fabulous product to lay, and it comes in so many different finishes, from timber effect to marble to colourful tiles, whatever you can imagine, it exists.
So it's not a tile, but does it look like a tile?
It can look like whatever you're trying to replicate. So it comes in planks or in tile format. So if you're doing the timber version, it will come in planks. So it does, for all the world, look like timber underfoot, but really, really hard wearing. So if you've got dogs, for example, or, you know, really heavily trafficked areas in the home, this stuff is fantastic.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it is expensive, but it's worth it, because presumably then it's hard wearing. You can mop it clean then. Is that it?
This is it. So in terms of, you know, if you're worried about water or, you know, staining, it won't stain. It's sort of brilliant with water, that kind of thing. So you're not going to have the same concerns if you're laying something like timber or... And when I say it's expensive, you know, it's comparable to a really good quality tile or timber flooring, but way more durable.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. You learn something new in the home show every week. Denise O'Connor from Optimise Design. And I know that you have stuff up on your Instagram about all of this stuff and the different types and all that. So that's up at Optimise Design.
Yeah.
And people can check it out here. And Denise, thanks a million for
coming into the
home show again with all those tips. And that is all we have time for on this latest episode of the Home Show podcast. If you've missed any of this week's episode, or indeed any other episodes, they're all up online on newstalk.com, on the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud, or indeed wherever you get your podcast, just search for The Home Show with Sinead Ryan. And if you want to get in touch with us, then you can do it, of course, on email, thehomeshow@newstalk.com. You can find me on Instagram. You can direct message me there. Thanks to producer Aidan McKelvey. Stephen McLoon was on sound. We will do it all again next week, and we will see you then.
The Home Show with Sinead Ryan, Saturday morning at 8 on Newstalk.